Good afternoon. Thank you for coming. My name is Steve Linus. I'm going to talk a little bit about what APRO does and who we are, as well as our relationship with Intel and the Cluster Ready program, and also about Mellanox and how Mellanox fits in very well with our go-to-market with our ExtremeX program. Just a brief snapshot of APRO as a corporation. We were founded in 1991 by Daniel Kim, branding solutions more towards the white box type of equipment. We're headquartered in Milpitas, California, with a sales and support office also in Houston. And then we have partners worldwide that are able to sell and support the APRO line of products. We're a leading developer of high performance servers, clusters, and supercomputers. Being able to deliver a very balanced architecture between CPU, the memory, disk storage, and interconnect, and being able to really show a very balanced solution for applications out in the HPC industry. The target markets that we typically do very well in, because of the architecture that you're going to see, is around the EDA, financial services, oil and gas, and manufacturing. High performance computing expertise is very important, right? And being able to deliver not just white box equipment, right? And not just drop in equipment, but be able to deliver a complete solution. APRO brings leadership in both price performance, energy efficient solutions, scalability and maintainability, and high availability features that you're going to see as we talk about the ExtremeX. Just a quick look at the number and wide variety of customers that APRO has in the U.S. as well as worldwide. You'll see predominantly U.S.-based companies, but you'll also see University of Tsukuba in Japan, as well as Renault Formula One in Enstone, U.K. When you look at APRO, the other thing you'll see is a very solid growth, right? So we've started with very modest sales dating back, you know, here to 2005 at $33 million, and ramping up at a very good, healthy pace over the last few years. When you talk about HPC expertise, you can see that APRO does have a pretty good background with some of very large clusters dating back to 2006, right? Starting with the NOAA cluster, Lawrence Livermore clusters, the Atlas, Minos, and then D.E. Shaw Research Cluster on Wall Street in New York. Some more current projects, the TLCC or Tri-Lab clusters with Lawrence Livermore National Labs, Los Alamos, and Sandia. And it's a total of 8 clusters, about 426 teraflops to date. Second one is at the bottom, which is just completing installation here in June of 2008 and made the top 500 list at University of Tsukuba in Japan, with a total of about 95 teraflops and achieving 83.2% overall efficiency in the LIMPAC number. And that one is actually using quad rail InfiniBand. And in this case, it's not just 4 ports, it's 4 separate HCA adapters being ganged together and providing over 6 gigabytes per second of bandwidth out of a 4 socket node. And then July 2008, the Renault Formula One CFD cluster in Enstone. And this is a 38 teraflop system doing dual rail using our ExtremeX bladed solution. So what are the pain points that people try to solve when they're building a supercomputer solution, right? Because technology is really driven by customer needs and the ability to try to get around specific pain points, right? And reduce the overall time that a solution can be brought into production and then maintainability from that point, right? As they get clusters continue to get bigger, the problems that you see continue to grow exponentially, right? The issues with interconnect, the ability to maintain and be able to diagnose any issues that are inside of a large crust or continue to grow. Power, cooling, and floor space are significant issues, particularly with the rising price of energy. Right? Weak interconnect performance, right? Going back to gigabit Ethernet, right? And up through some of the early proprietary high-speed interconnects, right? Being able to solve those with InfiniBand technologies. And then reliability, right, is a growing issue and problem. So when you build a really large cluster and you try to run jobs, failure of a single node is going to impact the ability to run your jobs, right? So the ability to have clusters that stay up for a long period of time is continuing to become more and more important. So that brings us to the Intel Cluster Ready program, right? So one of the things that APRO has really strived to do is have a kind of a cookie cutter approach and be able to do scalable units, right? Where a scalable unit is a fixed amount of compute power that we know exactly how to build, right? And can continue to build over and over again and deploy very quickly and efficiently and bring it up with very small amount of time once the equipment shows up on the floor. And this is kind of the idea behind the Intel Cluster Ready program. Right? It's a proven solution, right, that can be deployed quickly and easily. So we've worked with Intel and become part of the Intel Cluster Ready program so that we can deliver these types of Intel-based solutions over and over again with predictability and reliability. Right? And as part of our deployments, one of the things that we do is we do include the Intel software toolkit, right? So this is the cluster tools, the MPIs that were talked about before, right? So these get included with all of our cluster solutions that ship, right? And again, the idea behind the cluster-ready solution, right, is to get into production faster, right, to provide reliability and less downtime, right? And this lowers the overall costs, right? So you don't want to pay a million or $5 million or $20 million for a cluster and having it sit while you try to get it up and running, right? So this is the idea to be able to bring the cluster up quickly, right, and not have it sitting idle waiting to be able to go into production. Right? And one of the big components to the clusters that we're shipping is the new 45-nanometer Intel Xeon processors. Right, and we're very proud to be able to ship the Intel clusters. We've had a lot of very good experience being able to bring them up and have them be extremely reliable once they're into production. Right, and we're all looking forward to the next generation, right, which is the Nehalem-based architectures, right, particularly around the I/O bandwidth implementations and the achievements that we're going to be able to have with the QuickPath interconnect and be able to have the fast access to memory, right, that's coming out towards the end of this year. And that brings us to the ExtremeX supercomputer, right? So the ExtremeX was kind of designed with reliability and fault tolerance in mind, right? Some of the areas that are high pain points and high failure areas are things that have been designed into ExtremeX, right? So disk drives. The blades themselves are a diskless architecture, right? And we're actually moving the storage, moving the root file system off of the nodes and actually out into the network. Right, and being able to take those and put them onto drives that are rated and hot swappable rather than having to pull blades out and be able to swap hard drives. Fan trays, the ExtremeX provides N+1 redundancy at the fan tray level. Power supplies, you'll see the sub-rack has 6 power supplies supplying N+1 redundancy and hot swap capabilities. Network components, right? Key for any cluster. So we provide a redundancy both for the InfiniBand for the high-speed interconnect as well as Ethernet for the initial bring-up of the node, the diskless node, as well as for the management traffic that happens after that. Right. And then finally, the servers themselves, right? Beyond the compute nodes, we have the management nodes, right, that are built in an active-passive pair and have RAID 6 capabilities, right, to maintain as high reliability of the cluster as possible. Sub-management nodes that are in an active-active pair, and those will make a little bit more sense when we see the architecture, but they're basically servicing groups of nodes or a scalable unit within the overall cluster solution. And they're in an active-active pair and providing redundancy again at that level. And one of the other things we really wanted to tackle was the thermal problem, right? One of the things that kind of hit me when I saw this was a 5-degree reduction in temperature can up to triple the life expectancy of an electronic component. And this is very important when you're trying to maintain those high uptimes, right, and avoid any job losses. So, you know, in a typical cooling configuration, what you end up with is the cold air coming out of the chiller, right, and coming up through the raised floor. And the problems that we typically have in the data center is mixing, right? So the hot air coming around the sides or over the top of the racks, right, and mixing with the cold air, as well as, you know, just based on the basic force of the air coming up out of the floor, a lot of it is going to just continue right up past the rack, right, and not actually feed the cold air into the systems. Right. So one of the things that we designed into Extreme X is the capability to have a plenum type in the back of the rack, right? So here, the cold air comes out of the chiller unit under the raised floor, up through the hole, and is really contained within the plenum in the back of the unit and providing the cold air directly to where it's needed, which is to the blades. Right? So it avoids all of the diffusion and the mixing and really helps with the overall efficiency of the cooling unit. Idea being, a lot of times, the typical power required to cool a system is going to be about equal to the power required to drive the system. Using this type of technology, the goal is to drive that down to about half the amount of energy to cool the system as it does to actually power it. Right? The additional advantage that you see is because of the design of the equipment, there are no maintainable parts in the back of the system. This allows us to very easily take that, close the door, create the plenum effect, and at the same time, bring those racks together and put them back to back, right? Eliminating the need for the traditional cold aisle. Being able to do that reduces the overall floor space required to run the cluster. Okay. Again, the Extreme computer is based on a scalable unit, in this case, a single rack. And everything is driven by the scalable ACE software, right? So ACE is actually used to be able to do a number of things, right? It's so the place where the fabric manager runs and is able to manage the InfiniBand fabric. It monitors all of the nodes, as well as both the InfiniBand and Ethernet networks, and is able to report on any problems that are seen. It runs jobs more efficiently. It is topology aware and allows you to localize jobs so that they are able to take advantage of nodes that are located within the same subrack or within on the same InfiniBand switch. Right? And it's a total management package, right? So it's able to actually provide a lot of network services as well. It does the DHCP IP addressing for the cluster nodes and actually provides them to the systems through the sub-management nodes. Reliability, scheduling, two-tier management architecture. So this is actually where it becomes very important as you start to scale out. So you have your management nodes that are actually providing all of the management for the entire cluster, but there are sub-management nodes that are part of each scalable unit. These sub-management nodes actually manage those 64 blades, right, creating a very scalable architecture so you can continually to add scalable units without impacting the ones that are already there. It allows you to take a cluster of 1,000 nodes and actually reboot it or reprovision the nodes within about 2 minutes. And this just gives you a quick look at the software architecture, starting with the management nodes at the top. The sub-management nodes or I/O nodes in the middle, providing all of the services down to the compute nodes through the Ethernet network, as well as down over to the InfiniBand fabric. And this also allows you to attach global file systems, such as ones provided by Panasis or NetApp or however you would like to do it, right? You can attach Ethernet through gateways, you can do a direct attached InfiniBand storage, or you can have servers that are going to provide access to a fiber channel SAN. It's a scalable architecture. It's a cached root file system. So that means that the root file system is actually up on the management nodes being exported as a block device down through the sub-management nodes where it's cached. Right? This allows, again, the scalability, right, and the ability to very quickly and easily change operating systems and really manage the configuration, because there's a configuration management aspect of being able to take an operating system, check it out, make changes, check it back in, distribute it to a node or a group of nodes, and really test it out before you really go out and deploy it to a more significant portion of the fabric. Right? Redundant networks, fault tolerance. This just gives you a brief glimpse of a couple of screenshots of the Apro Cluster Engine management screens. Right? So here we're looking at a couple of InfiniBand switches, and you can actually very quickly see the status of the ports. You can view and look at statistics. They're all gathered in band. Look at the actual servers. This is the ability to do logical partitions and send out operating systems across groups of nodes. And then real quick, QDR and InfiniBand demonstration. So as was mentioned by Galad, Apro, Mellanox, and Intel have a demonstration at our booth, which is number 36, where we're demonstrating Fluent running over QDR. And this just basically goes through the Mellanox information that we went through before. The one thing I want to touch on that I'm very excited about is the idea of a 36-port InfiniBand switch. This allows us to actually take the 16 ports off of our blades, connect them to the 36-port switch, leaving 20 ports to either create a full fat tree topology or, in this case, a 3D torus. Being able to do this, we can take three ports and go in all six directions, right, using 18 ports and create either three 4X links or one 12X link in all six axes. And this is the scalable unit, right, which is basically four sub-racks, 64 nodes, 6 teraflops of compute power using the Intel 3.0 gigahertz Harpertown. Right, and this is basically the building block that we use to deploy for a lot of our customers. That's it.
We had a gentleman, wherever he was from, talk about the power efficiency of the I/O. Are you guys seeing, as you go to 40 gig InfiniBand or QDR, are you seeing a power efficiency like QDR versus, you know, lots and lots of 1 gig E's or something like that?
I think if you look at the overall power requirements, I mean, the QDR switch isn't going to draw significantly more. I don't remember exactly what the watt is. Gilad might know, I'm sure he does. But you know, if you look at the overall numbers compared to Ethernet, right, a number of Ethernet switches at probably about 60 watts apiece is going to draw a little bit more power, right? And even the interfaces themselves are going to draw a certain number of watts. So probably the watt per gigabit is going to be much more efficient.